You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Today he's speaking to us from...
San Francisco. It's unusual. We're about to supposedly enter a heat wave, but I've really been enjoying the great weather here.
Now, San Francisco, so many people tell us the city's dead or decaying. What's the state of the city you found?
It's the only city that could have survived the mortal blow that it's taken here. You know, the whole downtown area, Market Street, is mostly closed. You go anywhere in a business district and there's nothing, no activity in any of the office buildings above the ground floor. And even on the ground floor, there are a lot of vacancies. So San Francisco has lost quite a bit of its core infrastructure, but the neighborhoods are still, I don't know, they're still vibrant. Some places like Noe Valley, they seem to have gone upscale since I last lived here in 1999. Property values are holding up, and it's not like you can buy a house for cheap here. So the rumors of San Francisco's death are somewhat exaggerated. You go down, the homelessness is confined where it always was, to the Tenderloin, but they've really cleaned up a lot of areas, such as the Golden Gate Park Panhandle, and there are places where you used to see homeless encampments where they don't exist anymore. So San Francisco, to my way of looking at it, it's not doing too badly.
Now, the stock markets, have they underreacted, overreacted with the war against Iran?
Well, as it drags on, I think it's dawned on investors that this is not a war that's just going to be easily won or over in another week. Iran continues to shoot back, and even if I'll call them the allies, back off a little bit, the surrounding neighborhood is getting pelted, and it's hard to say initially they said that we had degraded Iran's firepower by 86%, but if you do the math, you'd think they'd be out of things to shoot at this by now, but they're not. So the more that drags on, the less omnipotent Trump appears to be.
And also the Iranians, if we take a look at how long it took Israel to get control of Gaza, a really tiny area about the size of any provincial or state park, how long would it take the U.S. to bring Iran under control?
Yeah, you don't really. It's just too huge a country, 90 million people. And I think you don't control what you do, what Trump's doing. You just kind of cross your fingers and hope that you can foment revolution there and completely do away with the mullahs and put Iran under some new type of rule, although neither Trump nor anybody else can predict exactly how that's going to go.
If you wanted citizens to rise up, why aren't they parachuting arms down to those people to try to overthrow the government?
Well, for all we know, they are. I'm guessing that there is some of that support, but Trump is being politically pretty cautious about doing things like that overtly.
Mm-hmm. Now, the stock market reaction to the war, what you expected, unexpected?
Well, it seemed to be going pretty well for a while, but now the market has got crude oil on its brain. And if crude oil is up, virtually everything, and I mean everything, is down. So, and that includes, oddly enough, gold and silver. So bullion is getting hit, and I'm looking at my screen here, and there's nothing that's going up other than crude and I guess interest rates as well.
With the obsession with oil right now, and for good reason, because 20% of it passes through the closed Strait of Hormuz, are we going to hit $200 a barrel?
Well, Hart, I doubt that, really. I think that would be a murderously high price. For the global economy would be out of business at that price, even above $100 in a barrel. You're getting you're setting conditions that could bring about a global, well, it's euphemistic to talk about a recession in those conditions. It'll be more like a global depression. But, you know, some of the things Trump said he would do, such as provide an escort and see some of these ships through the Strait of Hormuz safely, that hasn't come to pass. And the ships are still getting fired on, and Trump also floated another little trial balloon about how the U.S. government would ensure the shipping lanes or the shippers, and that hasn't happened to any great extent. So this throttle, the main passageway for global oil supply has effectively been throttled. And of course, investors certainly don't like that. It's a very threatening situation.
Is there any thought of building pipelines that could get around the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, that's way down the road. It takes a lot of investment, and it's a big project to lay in a pipeline. And we've discovered that there's kind of a geopolitical liability for wherever you put a pipeline. You're courting trouble, and of course one of the major natural gas arteries got sabotaged, and where are you going to build a pipeline? What's it going to connect when you can't really ensure that some supplier, particularly Iran, will be there to pump out gas?
What is our strategy now with the focus on crude and everything else falling?
Well, I think it's prayer, really. if we've enjoyed a little respite there at the pump with, I guess, regular gas in some places, certainly not California, but other places, Florida, where I live, coming down below $3 a gallon. But that never lasts for too terribly long. And, of course, energy, you push energy prices up, and the price of pretty much everything on planet Earth goes up because there's an energy input to everything we produce, from food to automobiles to, you know, steel to whatever. So the stock market definitely has reason to fear an increase in the energy input.
Yeah, the scary aspect of it when it comes to costs, the head of the Trucking Association in British Columbia told me once, everything you own was in a truck at some point.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I took a walk on the Golden Gate Bridge yesterday, and there was an enormous tanker. I was sort of comparing it to the somewhat large ferry boats that go from the San Francisco Ferry Terminal to Sausalito and Larkspur and a couple other places, and the ferry boat wasn't even minuscule compared to this tanker that was fully loaded with containers. So of course, when they go mainly to the port of Oakland, where the containers are taken off the ships and put behind 18-wheelers. So it's amazing how much energy it takes to develop a national distribution network. But it's definitely in a state of compromise right now, with crude pushing above $90 a barrel.
With the Strait of Hormuz closed, it's not just crude, it's natural gas and fertilizer, which is produced by natural gas. That's cut off. And there's also urea, which is needed apparently to start every diesel engine.
Nothing apparently is getting through the Strait. And it's interesting, Israel is already thinking ahead to wiping out the Houthis. They have a chance to do business in Somaliland near the one of the largest oil tank centers in that region. And they would be within shooting distance, I think something like 120 miles of Yemen, where the Houthis are camped out. And so looking into the sort of middle future, you can see a time when when the whole Middle Eastern region will not be hostage to Iran and its proxies. So I think that's something initially I thought, well, shouldn't the market be celebrating the death of global jihad? But they're not going to go quietly into the night.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, is Bitcoin going to perk up now, or is it struggling as well?
Well, I don't have a... I'm not bullish on Bitcoin for the long term. I really think that when you work out its value, what is the value of Bitcoin to the extent that it can be used to secure a transaction within a blockchain, it does have some value. But I would say that the value is closer to $2 or $3 per Bitcoin rather than a current, whatever it is, $67,000, $68,000 per. So... I don't see a brilliant future for Bitcoin, but someone's obviously in there messing with the markets because some time ago, this would have been within the last couple of months, Bitcoin made a bottom at 60,000.0000. And when something like that happens, it's basically an advertisement by let's call them the powers that be or smart money that's in Bitcoin saying, look, this is as low as we're going to let this fall. The price was so, the 60,000 was so precise to X number of decimal places that it was intended as a demonstration that someone's in charge of Bitcoin and that they didn't want it to fall any lower than 60,000. So last week it looked like their resolve might get tested, but I think the actual low was somewhere around 63,000 or so, and it's headed back up again. But I have a feeling that the Bitcoin powers that be will be forced to defend 60,000, and ultimately, I don't think they'll be successful.
With AI data centers growing, is copper going to remain strong if everything else is still going down?
It's hard to, it's hard to evaluate the copper story because, conceivably there's so much in the way of consumer electronics and server farms and everything where copper wiring is essential. And it's not to say that some new story could not come along and that all the AI grid is somehow the transmission medium would be something like graphene. So you don't know. And even years ago, I remember that the bearish copper story was that when they wired up Africa for a phone system, they were going to bypass the U.S. route where we have copper wires pretty much everywhere, every city, county, and state across America, but that the satellite system that would be the basis for an African telecommunications network would be copper free. So I don't know. So the story right now is definitely bullish on copper because nobody can really put an estimate on it. How much will you actually use? How many of these AI server farms will be built and all that? It's a story with, let's say, unlimited hubris potential, but no one really knows.
Well, if the production of electric cars continues, or even just hybrids, an EV uses a tremendous amount of copper, 277% more than your ICE vehicle.
Yeah, but the, even there, you know, I would say the future for EVs, other than the ones that China is cranking out torrentially, is uncertain. You know, Honda just took a huge hit because they basically rethought the whole EV market, and certainly EV sales have slowed down in the U.S. So yeah, I mean, the EVs can be made very cheaply by the Chinese, and they're going to sell pretty much everywhere else. But in the U.S., we seem to have settled back into an SUV. I won't call it a rut, but the economy the U.S. economy demands that everybody drive a 4,000-pound, Chevy Denali or F-250 truck. So if you hear anything about smaller sedans in the U.S., the only thing that can make that happen is the affordability question. Nobody can afford to buy a car.
Or if gas or, say, oil stays around $100 a barrel or more.
Yeah, but you kind of wonder, you know. I mean, the price of gas fluctuates so wildly, and it doesn't seem to affect the lines. If you go to Costco, it's the same old line, and people resign to paying whatever. If it's $2.88 one day and $4.85 in a month, everybody just sort of pays it, grins and bears it.
Mm-hmm. Something to do with AI. I'm seeing this trend where companies are now doing mass layoffs, expecting AI to do the job of so many people. Is that a realistic expectation, and are we ready to be or prepared to see a third of the workforce laid off because they're replaced by a computer?
Oh, I think when you say only a third, you've got to account for what the other two-thirds is doing, too. Nobody, who really does anything that's worth anything to this country other than plumbers and electricians and maybe the few cobblers that are left. But, you know, I see, even in my own business, I have my publishing tool is WordPress, and WordPress is about to move into a new version, WordPress 7.8 or whatever it is, and my webmaster did not really have a handle on the PHP coding that you use for those revisions, but he had Claude write him a manual on how PHP works in the system that we've got, and a lot of it was custom coded by a guy that I paid, I paid him a lot of money years ago, but now Claude can do that in a jiffy. And Claude, without even knowing how we use our PHP, it almost intuitively knew how to explain it and how it should be revised. So. You know, instead of, it looked like coders could write their own ticket, and if you were, let's say a contract job guy, I should know the name of that because I did it myself for a while. But if you're employing contractors, the coders used to name their own price. They were in such high demand, and they could at will just take a vacation. I think I'm going to go away for a few weeks, and there was always a job waiting for them. Now there is no job. The basic coding functions can be done very quickly and efficiently by AI machines.
Rick, are we going to see governments have to charge companies that replace workers with AI a fee to help support those people?
Yeah, that was Bill Gates' idea from a long time ago about taxing robots. And I think on the face of it, it's not such a bad idea. But if you kind of play it out you know, think of that on a large scale, like all certainly manual labor, and most thinking labor is done by machines. And I'm not talking about just coders. I'm talking about lawyers and a lot of white collar jobs. You tax the companies where with the companies themselves, whatever their end product, it has to have a buyer. But who are the buyers if everybody's laid off? And I still don't understand Musk's idea that someday we won't need money and we won't need jobs. I'm just not that much of a, I'm not that as much of a utopian as he is. But you got to wonder really whether we're going to all somehow get by doing each other's nails and cutting each other's hair or whatever.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, I do think that the stock market is showing more and more weakness, and I lack the imagination to see some whatever story could come out of nowhere and energize the market. It would have to be, considering what we've had so far, it would have to be a story that makes everybody feel like a brighter America is right around the corner. And I don't think we're getting there. I think Trump's had a lot of good ideas, but there's kind of a time lag there between when you regenerate your let's say manufacturing infrastructure. And even there, if you just peel a layer off that story, you discover that that if we're reshoring manufacturing, it would have to be with plants that don't have any workers in them. So nobody's really looking too carefully at that story. So I just don't see. And yeah, this is a congenital weakness of mine, is seeing the glass is half full of hemlock. But I just don't. I lack the imagination to see what's going to introduce a new golden era for investments, as we're talking about.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thank you, Jim. It is always a delight and a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from San Francisco. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.